episode 318.
Some of the worst technicians I ever worked with are the guys that said, I know it all. I don't need to go to classes. I've never had a comeback, all that stuff. They just weren't being honest with themselves. But quite often, they didn't want to show their weakness. You know, this is a very pride-based industry, if you will. You know, it's the machismo of guys don't want to let their guard down.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to Remarkable Results Radio. Listen to learn just one thing from today's episode on your journey to remarkable results. Welcome, aftermarketers, throughout North America and around the world. Carm Capriato here with a very interesting interview with three key leaders from Standard Motor Products Training. It's an inside look at Standard's training and some great points of view on where training is today and into the future. Hey, I want to thank Federal Mogul Motor Parts for their support of these interviews. When you need to search for parts or get the latest technical updates and even want to sign up for their Garage Rewards Loyalty Program for techs and shops, go to fmmotorparts.com and thank you. Hey, the network of listeners builds every week. I'm honored to make so many connections like new Facebook friends Jim Berberich, Chris Pula, Paul Smith, Dana Cosby, and Steve Harbo. And my latest LinkedIn connections, Richard Burney, MAAP, Hansen Henneberg, and Sam Alomar. Get connected with the podcast at remarkableresults.biz/social. Hey, so many are enjoying the podcast on my own listening app for iOS and Android. Got one of those smart devices? I'm sure you do. Get some cool features like episode highlights, my guests' pictures, and smart Bluetooth stop and start features. So you can listen while you're commuting, and you'll catch the entire episode during your to and from work. The podcast is so much better than the news. Hey, please see a new series recently created. It is a must-listen compilation for automotive technology students. It is meant to spread the real-world stories about the strength of independence and offer a real-world view of our beloved automotive aftermarket. Now, meet Ryan Koyman, Director of Training at Standard Motor Products, Jeff Masterman, the Manager of Technician Training Development, and Wayne Jerry Bishop, well-known instructor. The show notes for this episode is at remarkableresults.biz/E318. You'll want to pay careful attention to this episode as we talk about daytime training, augmented reality, the future of training, hands-on, case studies, course development, and the importance of the fundamentals. If you're a shop owner or technician and you're on the fence about making a 100% commitment to obtaining 40 hours of training per year, this industry is going to pass you by. Maybe you already feel it. Ryan, Jeff, and Jerry are going to serve up a very solid position on why you must be a lifelong learner and attend every training class you can get. Hey, warm welcome to Ryan Koyman, Jeff Masterman, and Wayne Bishop from Standard Motor Products.
Hello. Good afternoon, Carm.
Hey, Carm. Thank you.
Ryan, thanks for putting this together for me. I reached out to you a while back and said, you know, there's so much dialogue going on about training. Areas like how much training, nighttime training, same techs in the classes. What's going on in the world of training? How do you put these classes together? And you were so kind to come on yourself as the director of training and bring Jeff Masterman, who's the manager of technical training development for Standard, and of course, the guy in the trenches, Wayne Bishop, instructor. I think we have one heck of a great cross-section here to kind of dig into what's going on with the state of training in our industry. So guys, open questions to all of you. Let's talk about the future just for a moment. How many hours of training do you guys see based on the exposure you see in the classroom techs are going to need in the future?
Kind of hard to put a number on there, Carm, but, you know, I use 40 hours as a good, rough gauge. You know, nurses, insurance people, other industries need that, classic 40 hours of, continuing education. Even in some places in Florida, some instructors have to, or some technicians have to have this to continue to keep up their licenses. And a lot of instructors need continuing education. And I think it's kind of a, odd concept for a tech to need, training or continuing education. But, I kind of like that 40-hour-ish, number right there. And I think it wouldn't hurt any of them to have it.
Does that work for you, Jeff?
It is a good number. I'm not sure if there's that much training available on a regular basis. We certainly don't have enough boots on the ground to be in every town 40 hours a year. That's for sure. So yeah. There's going to have to come from other places like online training. But it has to be something that's measurable and, where it's an organized type of training. I mean, I certainly could sit around and read service information all day and learn a lot of stuff, but that's not the same as training.
What's the percentage that you guys, Ryan, are seeing feet in the seat, boots in the chair, or versus online?
Well, it's something we developed our online training program. Hard to believe it's been 9 years ago already. And, kind of the joke we always had is we're really good at shoeing horses, but the automobile is coming pretty soon. So we had to be prepared for the future with online training. And it's gotten some acceptance, but we've really understood, and that's a benefit of our training department. We've all been technicians at one point or the other and understand technicians. And technicians are social creatures, if you will, and like the camaraderie and being with other people. And so our bread and butter is still the butts in the seat, the people still come into a live actual class.
So guys, tell me, if it's going to be butts in the seats and it's going to be live leader led, is that going to change in the future? I mean, are you going to bring in vehicles? I mean, is there going to be more hands-on than ever before?
That's the number one request. People always want hands-on training. And we do hands-on training at our facility in Dallas. But with hands-on training, we have to change the ratio of students to instructor. Otherwise, if you have 50 people in a room with one instructor and one vehicle, 38 of the people end up talking about fishing and baseball and golf and stuff like that, while only a few people are in the vehicle. So it becomes very difficult to do that. So with that in mind, Jeff and his team develop a lot of animations and kind of experiences that we can put in the classroom to help replicate what they're actually seeing in the bay by understanding how the technicians learn. So moving into the future, I think we'll see more of the animation, automation, videos, kind of make the technician feel like he's in the moment and make him feel comfortable like he's in the bay. But man, my crystal ball is out for repair today, so I don't know exactly what the future is going to hold.
Yeah, I knew a long time ago that there were folks that couldn't actually get in their car and go to some of our training, and we heard that a lot. Our sales force is really out there talking to the technicians, the shop owners, and people on the street. So they were getting information from some of their more remote locations that those guys really couldn't drive an hour and a half or 2 hours or something to get to the class we scheduled. So that's one of the reasons that I started really thinking strongly about doing online training. But as Ryan mentioned, the social component that occurs at a training event seems to be the big draw. And the guys really like networking. They like working together to solve problems and talk about the repair that we're discussing. So it's going to be a hard thing to replicate anywhere else, but with all the people present.
Wayne, the networking that goes on in the class, do you keep an ear to it? What's going on with that?
Well, Carm, I got this job with Standard Motor Products years ago, and basically my in was I went to every class that Standard Motor Products used to put on in Jacksonville, Florida. And I remember back in the day, we had the general concept was a two-night class, and it was twice a year for two nights. And we used to get 70, 80 people. Become the Holiday Inn, we'd all eat and we'd sit down and have our class. But it was one of the few times you got to see your buddy from this shop or that shop or somebody you lost track with. And there's quite a bit of, if you want to call it networking and catching up, that goes long before the class even starts. And of course, you have the class. Now I see the same thing now from the other side of the table as an instructor. Everybody's catching up on, gossip and news and what's going on and, who shot a deer and, what car fell off a rack and stuff like that. So they all get a chance to do that networking. And I think that's one of the, one of the benefits of coming on site right there. The guys kind of let their guards down and they do get a chance to see this because during the day, they're all in their own little, circles. So I think that is kind of a fun concept of it. And, I'm sure behind the scenes, there's deals going on about, job openings and stuff like that for all I know. But it's a good chance for these guys to get together and see each other a couple times a year.
What about the social piece of what's going on with Facebook, for an example, and all the different groups that are out there? Do the guys talk a lot about that? And are they supplementing the instead of being in the class with things that are going on with the social groups, YouTube stuff?
I watch those YouTube sites and also the Facebook sites. And there's some really good information there. It's my concern sometimes, though, is that, you know, other than the fact that this guy did it or said he did it, you know, we don't really know exactly what the source and foundation is of some of the things that are on there. And we feel like we got to do better than that. So we may get something very similar to what's on Facebook or YouTube. It may be a guy fixing repairing a car or doing a diagnosis, but the guys that we use for that information are guys that we've vetted over the years. And we've got about a dozen contributors that we know we can depend on what they're telling us, and that they've actually repaired the car. They have the post-repair documentation. They show you the car is fixed and that kind of thing. So we use that type of source, but we spend a lot of time vetting what it actually is. And in fact, even trying it on the car ourselves to make sure that it works.
So the key here, guys, is the words validating the diagnostic solutions that you're coming up and you're finding, and you're using working diagnosticians to do case studies to prove this. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
And what you're saying is some of the stuff that you see are silver bullets versus the validation?
You know, I'm not bashing at all the guy's experience that, you know, he's got his phone out, he's videotaping something that happened in his shop. And I think that's fantastic, and it's worth trying. We tend to bring to town with us, you know, this, well, standard classes have good information in them, and we put a lot of things in print. And so we have to really hold ourselves to a pretty high standard to make sure what we're saying to the technician is something that he can turn around and use without running into any problems.
I just can't help but think the words, you got to get it right.
Pretty much, we do.
I've said it before, Carm, if we had to describe our training in one word, the word I would choose would be authentic. You know, it's a lot of us came as technicians, you know, guys like Wayne, myself, Jeff, we all grew up as technicians. And even my introduction to Standard Motor Products was as a case study contributor to Jeff. And I look back at some of those early case studies that Jeff picked me apart on, you know, and did his due diligence on. I fixed the vehicle, but I didn't know why I fixed the vehicle. And I may have been very incorrect in my assumption of how I fix a vehicle. And so you see a fair amount of that stuff out there. You know, there too, I watch a lot of the YouTube videos, follow the Facebook groups. There's a lot of great information in there. The scary part is sometimes people view the person that posts the most as the authoritative figure. And, you know, it even goes back to the days of IATN. It's like, oh, you know, Bert posts a whole lot here. He must be a whole lot. Then I started thinking, you know, I have 80 hours worth of work I have to do. I don't have time to post this much. How does he get that much time to post? So again, it goes back to we take great pride in what we print, and it's got to be correct. And so we've got a committee of not only the development team, it gets run by our advisory committee, also through the instructors again. You know, there's several circle backs here and revisions before we actually dare put it in print for the world to see and read.
Jeff, I can't imagine how hard your job is. Hearing what I'm hearing, somehow a committee gets together and says, we need to do a new class on this. And you look at that Mount Everest staring you in the face, because not only do you have to get all the right information, you have to prove it, validate it, do case studies on it before you ever put any, feet in the seat, right?
Pretty much. Yeah. It's something that you know, our thankfully Standard has given us a free rein to develop training for the sake of it being good training. We work for a company that, you know, would love to sell car parts, and we hope they sell tons of them, but they don't, you know. Our training is a separate entity within the corporation. And we've been able to, for many years, and even before I got here, you know, 24 years ago, there were guys doing what I do and making sure that what we were putting out there was correct. And we also, you'll sometimes, you know, folks will ask us, well, why don't you do a class on such and such? And the answer is that we really cannot spread ourselves into that topic. There's not enough information out there for us to feel confident about. So we pick our battles based on what we think the guy sees frequently, and also where the pain is in the stuff he works on every day.
Got it. Where are you learning the pain points? from the techs?
Yeah, we learn from our tech line, from technicians, IETN, there's Identifix. I mean, if you look at what people are asking questions about, over, you know, you can get a sense of what they're struggling with. And I think, Wayne, I think you send us a lot of that kind of stuff in. What's your experience with listening to where the technician's pain is?
I try to use whatever their feedback is in the class to kind of point my, you know, class in that direction. What you were talking about, how we develop classes based on, you know, case studies in the shop. I always try to keep my ear out to see what they're complaining about or what they're having trouble with. And I can steer my class in that direction any given night. Like we talked about before, you know, Ryan already mentioned people want to have like hands-on training and, you know, they want more scope and, you know, how to use my scan tool and all that more. I always keep my ear open and I can, you know, make my class weave any way it needs to weave. And in the course, you know, every year when we have our training, our train the trainer, you always ask for topics. You know, what can we do to, you know, for next year? And we pickle barrel them like that.
I love what you just said, Wayne. You're willing to, you know, jive left and right depending on what the needs of the class are.
Sometimes we assume things, and it's amazing the different levels of technician we have any given night. And personally, I always try to throw something out there for all my guys. I don't think advanced technicians really get so uptight about teaching basic concepts, but somebody who's a C tech or just getting started with a scan tool, you know, I can't talk over his head either because he'll be even more frustrated. Then on the same note, I always try to leave, and all of our classes have these in there, these little high tech, you know, nuggets, these little jewels of what's new and what's different. And even there's always something even for the high tech guys, the techs are in every class anyway, but I always feel like I give them something, you know, to leave with too. But an example I had, and this is a true story, we were teaching electronic throttle, which is an old, fairly old technology. It's been around for some time now. And we talk about this sensor and that sensor back and forth. I had a guy at break come to me, and he was sincere when he was talking about throttle position sensor one and two, and he was talking about throttle position sensor number two being that other throttle blade that he knew was underneath the intake manifold. I just had a conversation about redundant, you know, sensors on the throttle plate, but, you know, he just didn't understand. So I can use situations like that to, you know, where I assume somebody knew and I can lead them in the right direction.
I'm talking to Bud Houston, a technical product specialist with Federal Mogul Motor Parts. Hey, Bud, what's the best thing about the Guru on the Go van?
Yeah, I think that the best thing about the van and the kind of the mission is it's twofold. One is ultimately to bring brand awareness of the Federal Mogul portfolio. But I think the way that we do that is we bring value to the technician, the shop owner. And how we do that is we bring technical content. We bring some updated material. And once they see that I care about their operation, their reputation, and their qualifications, one, they're built up. But two, they really at that point listen to what I have to say about the brands, and it's built, the relationship is built on a mutual benefit.
So you bring technical stuff and you bring product specific.
Yeah, me personally, I'm super technical background. So anytime I'm doing a lunch and learn or a van visit, a training session, it's typically 90% technical, 10% product.
Any new Moog products that are getting good reviews?
Yeah, one that's recently released is the Dodge Ram 25 and 3500 complete steering assembly. It's inner and outer tie rod ends and drag link pre-assembled. This is the first aftermarket part that's available in a complete assembly for this application. And the specific applications, late model Dodge Rams, are actually a kind of a high failure part on the chassis parts.
What about the compression-loaded ball joints with pre-installed integral dust boot?
Yeah, the integral dust boot has been a huge hit. Initially, the idea was, well, where is the boot? And then once you kind of get around and show people, they're like, well, that is the best idea I've ever seen because I've torn so many boots on installation, or I've had a boot that's not seated properly. And they're like, well, that's just not an issue now. And they love it.
Federal Mogul Motor Parts' Garage Gurus is your go-to source for the vehicle training, technology, and answers you need to keep your next job on track. On site, online, or on demand, the Gurus are here to help keep your business and your career on the road to success. Visit fmgarageguru.com. So, guys, is there a struggle knowing that you're going to have a C and a B and an A tech, whatever that really means, in your class, and that you've got to please
all levels. I think I heard you say that.
Mm-hmm.
The A-Tech's ever come up to you and said, well, thanks, Wayne. I learned just one thing. And the C-Tech comes up to you and says, oh, my God, I can't hold everything that you taught me.
Oh, absolutely. But, you know, good technicians come to school. They just think that's the price of doing their job. Like, I went to every class. If my salesman told me, I mean, I'm being silly, but if my classman told me that Standard Motor Products was going to have a class on diagnosing glove box, I would have been there. I didn't care because every class that came, and I always want to pick up something. I've had technicians tell me, they say, well, you didn't tell me anything new, but you reminded me of things I forgot, you know, and it brings them to the forethought of their head.
How many guys, Wayne, that you see in the class remind you of you?
Oh, several. You know, I've been around 12 years now with Standard. And there's some markets that I bet you I've been into 8 or 9 of those years. You know, my territory has moved over the years. I'm mostly down the Southeast now. But there's folks who come to every class because it's just what we do. We come to school. And I know these guys are friendly guys. I go to the shop sometimes and have lunch. But they just understand when school comes, it's like, you know, the daggum fair comes to town. And we're there because that's what we have to do. And they're all friendly. How you doing? Like I said, they network with their pals and stuff like that. And then there's the guys who, you know, begrudgingly come in because the boss man told them they had to, or they're just there for the barbecue, or they thought there was going to be beer or something like that. And those guys will come and go, you know, as needed. But
well, how do we get the guys in the classes that need this and or more training?
Some are just absolutely resistant to training because they already know how to fix that car, or I could teach that class, or God forbid they still think they're working on 350 Chevys.
Carm, you know, one thing I wanted to add about the mixed, the homogenous classroom, or homogeneous, that's the word, is that we decided to, a couple of years ago, break out about half of our on-demand classes and focus them on fundamentals. So we have a whole series each year of 101 classes. So the guy that Wayne was talking about with electronic throttle control, you know, we have a fundamental class on that. And we promote that as, you know, look, if you've been to the pro seminar or the pro training and you're, you know, you feel like the guy's talking about stuff that you should know, but you don't, if you go to some of those 101 classes, it can help you get ramped up and learn about, you know, some basic stuff. We just did one on relays because we find so many guys just don't totally understand what a relay does. And now the relays have changed a good bit over the years, and there's electronic relays. And so, you know, that's the kind of topics we're pulling out. Because in the beginning, back when William was talking about two-night classes, we used to build a GM engine control system from the battery out. And of course, now we did that over and over and over again, and our technician base got more educated about how things worked. Many more of them took the time to be ASE certified and you know, really are learning. And there's some younger guys in there that electronics makes sense to. So to kind of make sure we go back and reach the guys that might need some basic stuff, we do a lot of that in our online training.
I can't help but think of the discussion that I've had most recently. I was at Vision, recorded a lot of episodes, and we were out there talking about the tech shortage, and I don't want to get into that in this episode unless you guys have some really great contribution to make, but it's moving toward, you know, what are the systemic problems that exist and why are we in this position we are, and there's a lot of people working on it. Yet one of the net results is we have to grow our own. And Jeff, when you mentioned 101 classes, it just reminds me of such critical training that's going to be necessary as we embrace, a startup tech, call him a C, an entry level, and get him to a ton of 101 classes.
Ryan, you want to talk about the Votech deal, stuff you've been working on?
Yeah, well, let's back up again and talk about, Carm asked the question of, there's all these guys out there that don't attend training. How do we get them into training? that's the age-old question. You know, we talk about Wayne and his brethren trained over 70,000 technicians a year, which we like to think that's an astronomical number. However, if you look at the amount of ASE-certified technicians out there, you know, that our number pales in comparison to those guys, much less all the other guys that are below the radar out there that desperately need the training. And so how do we reach those people? That's the big question there. And so when we ask these questions of, you know, why don't you conform to us? Sometimes goes the other way. We may need to conform to them and meet them where they're at. And so, again, that's where we have these online classes of either guys too egotistical. Some of the worst technicians I ever worked with are the guys that said, I know it all. I don't need to go to classes. I've never had a comeback, all that stuff. They just weren't being honest with themselves. But quite often, they didn't want to show their weakness. You know, this is a very pride-based industry, if you will. You know, it's the machismo of guys don't want to let their guard down. And so that's where the online training has an additional benefit there of, you know, if we're going to do an electrical class, we have to call it an advanced electrical class for guys to come out and hear Wayne. We call it a basic electrical class. Nobody's going to let their ego through the door. So with the online classes now, we have that opportunity to do it in the privacy of your own home. You know, you can watch those fundamental type classes, if you will.
So that's another way to get the training out there. And you have you done a study on the online participants? Is it the ones you speak of?
It's certainly a younger demographic here.
Okay.
So there's three different aspects to it, the online stuff. First off, it's people that want to go to training but just can't get it in their marketplace. You know, we've got 18 full-time instructors going from Guam to Maine, Puerto Rico to Fairbanks, Alaska, everywhere in between. But there's some small little towns out there that just can't justify a live class. And so those guys will seek out and find online training beneficial. There's also the guys that you've interviewed many times over that are just training nuts. Mm-hmm. They want, if there's a class available, they want to learn about it. They'll come to that type of stuff as well. But now there's also the younger generation. You know, it's a shift in demographics, right? You talked about opening opportunities in the marketplace here, and we look at the baby boomers leaving, millennials entering in, and it's a change in demographics. And these kids learn different than the previous two generations did. So again, we have to look at that and work to meet them where they're willing to learn.
So because of the millennial, if you will, and you know, the Gen X is the digital natives, is that where you feel the online is going to be a slam dunk?
Slam dunk is a hard word to use there. I think it's still the social aspect of it.
Okay.
One thing we've started to do here is partner with Votech schools. And so like Universal Technical Institute, we partner with them. And so we're becoming ingrained in their culture. And so they're installing our products on vehicles in their classrooms. We're starting to build a relationship with those kids in high school or right out of high school as they're going to school. We're building a relationship with their instructors. As Wayne mentioned, instructors need training as well. And so we want them to learn about our training programs and help train the trainers as well as build a relationship with them, get them started thinking about standard brand products. It's the marketing guy in me has to go in there as well.
I get that part, and I like it. You're always thinking for the company, and you should be. There's a lot of people that are listening to this that are involved in education, be it high school, be it college. I happen to be on advisory board of the Erie Community College here in Buffalo, New York, where I am, and I love what you just said, getting involved in Votech and helping, you know, do the train the trainer kind of thing. What is it going to take? Tell our audience what it's going to take to go to their local Votech college and or high school and say, hey, listen, there's some things we can help you with.
I found, as you'll attest to, those people are hungry for assistance. And so kudos to you. And that's a great example right there, is just jump on their advisory committee. Those people are always looking for people in the industry. And back when I was in the shop, that was a great way to handpick the selected students. We got first dibs at those good kids there. And it was a great way to partner with them and show these younger kids that there is a very promising career in auto repair by that partnership.
Thank you for that. Wayne, you're going to a city, you're going to do a great class, and you're not necessarily happy with the attendance so far. What do you say to your distribution network? How do they go out? And because you really have to rely on your distribution network to help fill the seats, am I right?
Yeah, Carm. I pretty much roll in there and the class is set up. You know, the venue, whether I'm at a restaurant or even a technical college, like Ryan was just talking about, probably 20%, maybe 25% of my venues are Votech or, you know, the college or even the high school sometimes. But that's set up ahead of me. I'm dedicated to you know, to a vendor, and that's their job, is to ground people, put, you know, people in there. You talked about the trouble of getting technicians to come to classes the first time. You know, sometimes my salespeople, sometimes they give away a free seat just to get somebody in there to see what it's about, and then let their guard down and realize I'm not trying to sell them, you know, Amway or nothing like that. But I go into a town, I could have 15 people there, I could have 75 people there. And I just realize it's an overused cliche, but it is what it is, and I'm just going to, you know, do my best. And then I realize those 10 or 15 or 30 people are going to tell their friends, you know, or their other, you know, companions that, golly, that was a great class we had the other night. It's never going to come back again. You should just start, you know, coming to school.
But I love the idea what you just said, and that is a distributor, a jobber would offer a free class to someone because in their heart they know that there's not enough training going on in this place. And, you know, talk about being selfish. If I was a distributor and I wanted to see the shop survive because they buy parts from me, I would want to do everything I possibly could to get everyone inside of every one of my customers' places into training.
Oh, absolutely. It happens quite frequently where the salesman says, you see that guy over there? He's the best guys in town, but you know, he won't come to class. So I had to comp him this one to see what it was about. And then, of course, after the class, they always have the exit interview, and they go, man, that guy was awesome. Just sign me up for everything they do. They just have to let their guard down. They don't want to expose themselves sometimes to new. And they realize we're always trying to fix cars, and they go, you know what? It's not such a bad thing.
Well, I'm glad we said this. This is important to know, and hopefully anyone who's listening to this who has not done the degree of training that they should, we want you to attend classes, because the future of our industry is going to be all about having really good people fixing these cars that know what they're doing.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we're talking about parts that an individual part could cost $1,000, and if you're not sure of whether or not that part needs to be replaced, you could be in a very precarious situation as a, you know, the business, the technician, the customer is going to stress out. So it's very important that the guys accept the fact they need to know the fundamentals, but then also learn some of the pitfalls, which we're very fortunate to hear about from the guys that, you know, some of the good stuff we get is from technicians that basically failed, and they discovered why they made a mistake, and so what we can do is to show our attendees, you know, this could happen to you. This is a pretty clever guy, and this is the hole he fell in. So, you know, that's what it looks like, and hopefully the next time you're walking by it, you'll walk around it, you know. So that's one of the reasons I've been doing this for a long time, and the thing that keeps me doing it is the fact that I know what we're doing. We're giving information to people who need it from people who know it. And guys like Wayne, you know, he's a pretty humble guy. He's not going to tell you that a lot of reasons those guys are going to come to every class he teaches is because of him. You know, but we have a lot of guys like Wayne out there that develop a rapport with the technicians. Our guys take emails and phone calls and help fix cars for guys in the town they left. And, so there's a lot of that going on. And that, of course, funnels into our training as well.
So is it true, Wayne, that students once called you the George Jones of training?
Yeah, I heard that. Something about me being smooth and always having a story to tell.
That's right.
It was funny. That came from, not to cut you off, Carmen, that came from Fairbanks, Alaska, of all places. I guess I can get across all cultures.
Wow.
Geographical boundaries.
What a ride that had to be.
Amen.
I do have a twisted sense of humor, so I'll send the Florida and Arizona guys to Fairbanks in December, you know, just to see how the rest of us, you know, in the Rust Belt here live.
It helps with their gratitude.
they're much more appreciative of their local culture.
Yes, we always take care of the ones we love. I understand. What did I do wrong?
trust me, though, I never sent them to some place I wouldn't do myself. So I've done that route as well.
Well, great. It's good to be humble too, Wayne. I understand it. Now, guys, we can't have trainers on the show here without talking about daytime and nighttime training. Now, I'm going to go on record to say I'm a daytime trainer guy. And back when I was in the distribution business, we really pushed the envelope 10, 12 years ago. And, you know, what's so amazing is everybody's going through every excuse in their mind right now, and they're waiting for you guys to answer, and they're all thinking, can't do daytime, got to do nighttime, and we know the reasons why, but we can't shut the shop down. And why do guys shut the shop down and send the entire team to Vision for 3 days, you know? It boggles my mind. Why do great cultures inside of businesses say, listen, you got something to go on with family? You just do it. Spend time with your family. No one will die, and we'll work around you. And they schedule. And so to me, it seems fairly easy to make the decision to commit to daytime because I think their ROI is going to be bigger. Agree or disagree, guys?
It's a huge ROI on that, on the part of the shop. And you see time and time again, the successful shops do embrace that. And you mentioned some successful shops will shut down for a couple of days, send their guys to an event such as Vision because they see the ROI in it. Unfortunately, that's maybe 2-3% of the industry right there. And so you're dealing with the cream of the crop at that point. Mm-hmm. They get it. There's still a lot of people out there actually doing handwritten invoices. I'm not throwing darts at people, but it's hard to track the numbers. And, you know, we live in a world of actually tracking the numbers, right? And I mean, even on my phone, I can pull up an app and look at the old shop I used to work at and see the numbers and the proficiency level of each of their bays. These guys are cutting edge technology. They understand that type of stuff. Mm-hmm. And they'll send a guy to training during the day. Not everybody subscribes to that. You know, Wayne can tell you stories of shops he's visited, you know, in his travels of, you know, people might not even have the internet in some cases yet. And that's the world we live in still. And mm-hmm. that guy's not going to shut down for a day of training.
And the guys that do come to our hands-on classes, you know, we spend 2 days with 12 guys and generally two instructors, and we have our own stable of cars that we purchase so we can poke on and brake and fix and do so for various things to them. But the way those guys become enabled by going to that training, it just empowers them to go back to the shop and do things that they have actually done themselves. They did it. The guy that was next to them in a class did it, and they saw it done, and they're able to do it. It's if you really want to learn something, that's how you do it. But trying to get people to come to the hands-on classes is hard, and our department continues to try to push, and we make them open, and we try to get people to come, but it's a struggle. And that means they have to take off, you know, basically 3 days from work because they have to be there for two and travel one. So, but it's a very big commitment, but the reward is huge. I've mm-hmm. been in touch with them afterwards, and they just said, you know, after you showed me how to do that, I've been doing it, and it's really made my job much easier, and I'm doing a much better job. So,
is it the technician who says, I don't want to leave family, got a bowl, got to cut the grass? Is it the shop owner who doesn't see the value? Is it a combination? What do you think the pushback is?
I think our industry is just a lot of those shops are old-fashioned, and technicians still make commission. So if you don't turn a wrench, you ain't making a dime. Yeah. And there's still, believe it or not, quite a few shop owners who feel like if they invest in a technician's, you know, education, that he'll leave them. And I'll be dead gum if I'll pay for him to go to school. He's just going to turn around and leave me to it and go to another shop. But I know early on, I used to go to AC Delco classes occasionally. There was a school in Jacksonville, Florida, which we were fortunate to have one. And there's nothing like daytime classes because your brain is more refreshed and you've got to start and you're just focused on the task of the day of going to school. I just think that just the opportunity is not there for a lot of those guys. It's just, I got to work all day and then I'll feed you, which we do to get their strength back up and get them, you know, happy again. And then I have that window of 3.5-ish hours and that's just what we got. So we'll take what we can and do the best we can with it until one day they can understand they, you know, daytime classes might be beneficial and to get enough people to buy into it.
I'll never forget the good old GM training centers. There was one here in Buffalo and it was always, I would say 90% of it was daytime.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. So there's nothing wrong with daytime. They're going to learn a lot more. You know, so let's say that there's a 20 to 30% of shops that are kind of behind the times. But the top tier, do you find them balking at all to send their techs during the day?
Quite often it's not offered, to be honest with you. You know, you have enough buy-in mm-hmm. to cover costs of the training. You have to get a certain amount of buy-in, you know, whether or not there's enough top tier shops in a local market to get the buy-in to make it effective from a price standpoint. That's an issue. As Jeff mentioned, like when we do our hands-on classes at our corporate training center in Dallas, we've actually got hands-on air conditioning going on as we speak. Those guys come the first time and they're sold. You know, they see the value in it and they come back again and time again. To go back to your statement, they see the ROI in it. As Wayne mentioned earlier, that's one of the biggest issues in this industry is shop owners are afraid of investing in a technician and then having him leave and going somewhere else. So, you know, the question is, you're telling me you'd rather keep an uneducated technician on your staff to keep him longer? I mean, it's amazing that people still have that mindset.
Mm-hmm.
So, Jeff, you're getting ready to do a class. Do you rely on a lot of OE information? Is it good? Is it current? Can you use it?
Well, it's certainly the basis for our when I'm researching, I make sure that, you know, I'm not just going to making up my own theories about how stuff, where it is, what it is, how it works. But we also find that frequently the way they describe how things work is sort of designed to at a level that they think the average guy understands as opposed to the way things actually work. We're fortunate to have almost an engineer working for us as my coworker in development. And this guy, if they say that how something works in the service information, he won't go to sleep until he makes sure that they're not lying about it. And we've discovered quite a few things that don't actually work the way that service information says they work. And we base that on the fact that we have the device, the vehicle, the system in front of us, and we're testing it. We're thinking, well, this isn't what it says. That could be pretty problematic for the fellow that's got to diagnose it, because if he's just simply following step A, B, C, and D in the service information, he might end up finding out that that's not going to get him where he needs to be. So we don't just redact stuff out of factory information. We use it as the basis. We always say you need to go there, you need to look at it. Frequently we find also that some of the information you need for diagnosis is sort of buried in some of the pinpoint tests. And most technicians really don't, when they look at a procedure to diagnose something and they look to the end of it and there's like 30 steps, you know they start backing off right away. And so what we would rather have them do, as opposed to just shotgunning something, we'd like to try to go through the 30 steps and say, well, wait a minute, if what we're trying to find out, if this throttle position sensor is producing the proper signal, why don't we try doing this? And it can sometimes cut through a lot of those steps, especially if we discover that it works. And that's really the key. So if we come up with our own diagnosis that's parallel to the factory, then we make sure that it works. And we're getting that information from a guy that actually did the car.
So your job is to take a look at that OE stuff, the schematics, and really bring it into almost simplistic terms for your student.
Yeah. Yeah, we actually put, we give people schematics to analyze. We do a lot of schematic analysis in class. We look for critical test points. We show them how to highlight a schematic and find different things before they start a job. And we use a schematic sort of as a map also to how the system is laid out in a car, where the parts are, how they talk to each other. And I think, you know, when you do that, you're teaching them a skill that they can apply not just to this particular car, but they can apply it over and over again to other cars when they're diagnosing them.
Guys, do you ever do free training? Does anybody ever show up?
Sometimes we do some pro bono work or through different associations, but you know, again, we're not the ones actually selling the training. I sell it to one of our distribution partners, and then they're the ones that sell it. And it's interesting. The ones that give it away for free, I mean, they kind of seem to set the tone there for what the value proposition is of the evening. And so time and time again, as long as I've been involved with this, the people that charge the most for the training get the most attendees for the training. And it's the free training just doesn't pay off or doesn't draw the people in.
Okay. You said a little earlier that your crystal ball was kind of dark today. So I may pose this question to Jeff and Wayne. augmented reality, you know, support from the tech line. What's the future of training, guys? How do you see it when you sit down and do your strategic thinking?
I'm a little clouded. I do go to the ATMC deals every year, and I look at the augmented reality stuff, and I think that's really, really awesome. However, in order for that to work, when you think of the sheer number of vehicle configurations there are on the road, there really is no way that that could ever become you could create augmented reality for every car you needed to diagnose the alternator on. I mean, there's just too many of them. However, if the augmented reality can teach a guy a technique or show a thought process or demonstrate it, you know, a way of going from point A to point B on a diagnosis, then that's possible. Then what it's being done on doesn't become, it isn't specific to what you're doing it on. It's specific to the process. So our augmented reality starts with a picture of a car in a shop, a work order, okay, a customer description, a visual inspection, and then what we do is go through the diagnosis of the car. So this is our way of doing something similar. And also for when we do that in the case studies, we're not trying to show them the one car nobody could fix in Monroe, Louisiana. We're showing them a process. We're showing this guy has a process. We talked about the process before we even did a case study, and now we demonstrate the guy doing the process. If the mass airflow sensor is supposed to produce this signal, we show him how to see if it's happening. And, you know, so the augmented reality is a great idea. Now, as far as remote diagnosis, that's something that's going on. It's certainly really, I only see it working with things like flashing computers or a guy remotely looking at a data stream, because there really is nothing like the technician actually being there and looking over to the right and discovering a bundle of wires that doesn't look quite right and going in there and saying, oh, somebody did some creative wiring repair over here. This is probably my problem, you know? So the guy that's in a computer somewhere can't do that. But they certainly can. I've been watching a couple of outfits that are doing remote programming, and some of the mobile techs that we work with do remote programming. And some of their bigger accounts, they'll leave a device there at the shop, and when a guy needs to flash a computer, these guys can just basically log in from wherever and flash a computer for them. So it's certainly something that can help supplant a guy actually physically being there.
So, do you see the tech line, Ryan, taking some changes down the future?
In some respects, and this is a little bit of a secret, but by the time this airs, it won't be a secret. I'm actually taking over a tech line and adding it to our department, just because of the cross pollination there is with training and the opportunities to train people when they call in, and as Jeff mentioned earlier, the amount of knowledge we get by what people are struggling with every day there. Yeah, moving forward with that, I certainly see videos supplementing that type of stuff. And, you know, as you talk to the guy on the tech line, go here, click on this link right now, and it's going to pop up on your screen. You're going to see a little animation or a video of what you're struggling with, kind of a little bit of a just-in-time fix. I struggle to call that training yet, but it's an answer to somebody's problem. And that's the business we're in. We're in the people business, and we're trying to remove their pain.
Aha moments as a trainer. I think, Ryan, you can probably go back in the archives and remember something that, you know, if someone said to you, hey, just give me an instant of, you know, you're doing your thing, and you just will never forget it. Jeff, what about you?
For me anymore, I train our trainers. And one of the big aha that comes for me is that when one of the trainers gets a hold of me and says, hey, you know what? I taught that class, and I had these two guys come up to me after class, and he said, you know, we got one of those at my shop, and it's been kicking our butt for weeks, and we're going to try what you said. And the guy's emailing me to tell me that the follow-up was that it worked, they fixed the car, and they're just tickled to death. And that's really the big aha for me. That's when it really all comes together and makes it worthwhile.
What a rewarding moment. Wow. Oh, yeah. It's what you live for, right?
Yep.
Wayne, how about you?
Well, I have to add on to what Jeff just said. I always get personal satisfaction when somebody comments, you know, they worked on a car and had the same, you know, type issue. But I also like it when I come back and they say, oh, you know, I had a car like that after I've already taught them, and they use what I t- told them, say we had an example of a bad, you know, part on a car, and they realized how to diagnose around it, I think was awesome. So I knew that what I brought them actually worked in the real world. And for me, I also get a kick when they kind of get where I'm coming from, because sometimes I lead my guys from previous classes about a concept I talked about in another class, and they remember it. And so as a trainer or a teacher, I kind of get a kick out of that, because they remembered something I taught them when I was there 6, 8 months ago, a year ago, and they still remember it, so they're still using it. So I think that's huge right there for me too.
Wayne brought up Fairbanks, Alaska, and I've got a great story from a visit up there. It was, you know, every time you go to a town for the first time, the sales guy always has the guy in town, right? And they like to tell you ahead of time. And this guy, the technician's name was Matt, and the store manager said, oh, hey, if anybody's going to give you a hard time tonight, it's that guy right there. He's a very sharp technician. He's gonna test you. He's gonna push you. And so right away, I went up and introduced myself to him. And, you know, what better way to get on good terms than be a friend with him right away. So, you know, he said, this isn't going to be one of those sales pitches again, is it? No, absolutely not. You got my firm commitment. We are technical from the podium. We're not selling here. He said, well, I've heard that before. Somebody else came to town a couple months ago, and it was a selling class. I said, how much did you pay to come to class? He said, $100. I said, okay, I got a $100 bill in my wallet. If at any point you feel I'm selling, you raise your hand and the $100 bill is yours. And so we get started, and I'm just done with the first case study. We like to start the class off with a case study, kind of set the tone early. I just wrap that thing up, and this Matt throws his pen on the table. I said, okay, everybody, I apologize. Matt, is there an issue here? And he says, if you would have been here 3 weeks ago, you could have saved me 8 hours on that diagnosis. Just 15 minutes showed me what I spent a full day on. I said, all right, we're good then, right? And he said, preach on. And so, you know, got many stories like that, but it's just fun to give people what they need to help them do their jobs. And, you know, I kind of miss that now, being here in the ivory tower a little bit. You know, guys like Wayne get to live that day in and day out and see the result of the work that Jeff and his team do. You know, that's what it's all about, though, is helping people again.
Great story. You know, you're right about the paradigm of selling. You know, for years, I don't think you've ever gotten by that one. If it's a selling seminar, I don't want to go. And it's almost, there's a blockage there. But, you know, I've known you guys for years. I've sold your product for years. And it's amazing. I don't think you've ever done that. I mean, maybe you brought in some people under the guise that it's going to be, hey, we're going to teach you, we want to sell you some TPMS. But for training, I think you guys have always been true to your content. Always.
That's our goal.
Yep. A lot of guys appreciate that too, because they'll come up there and flat tell you that the last guy was here had a tool, and his whole theme was, if you had my tool, you could fix that car.
Yeah.
So they like it.
Good for you. Anything you guys want to contribute before I say bye?
We hope we can reach more of the people that we're not reaching, because we do have a very loyal following. And, you know, many of the people that we count as attendees over a year's time are not, they're not just coming to one class. And we sure like to have the number grow and reach into the areas where the guys aren't coming, because they're the guys that need it absolutely the most.
Well, thank you, guys. Ryan Coyman, Director of Training, Standard Motor Products. Jeff Masterman, Manager, Technical Training Development for Standard. And, of course, Wayne Bishop, Instructor, Standard Motor Products. Guys, I learned a ton, and thank you so much for your passion for training in our industry.
Thank you. Tom. Thanks for
providing an avenue for us to reach the masses, too.
Thank you, Ryan Coyman, Director of Training at Standard Motor Products, Jeff Masterman, the Manager of Technician Training Development, and Instructor Wayne Jerry Bishop. Well done, guys. Your transparency was welcome as we face the great challenge of keeping up with technology and the training that is so necessary to keep pace. The show notes for this episode, remarkableresults.biz, that's BIZ/E318. You know, every week the podcast archives grow to include the Town Hall Academy. Now, if you're a new listener, you've got to spend about 10 minutes on the podcast website, remarkableresults.biz, and discover the vast content library of under an hour audio lessons that just may improve your pathway to remarkable results. Carm Capriotto here, thanking you for your listenership. And don't forget, share with a friend. Talk soon.
Thanks for being being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.